I feel like we're becoming an old man podcast where we start most of the shows talking about the weather, but it's like really cold.
That's what I mean,
it's really cold.
That's why I got my Lagasol hat. My Lagasol hat makes me feel like it's really, it makes me feel cozy. It looks like a winter blanket on my head.
I told when we started, you know, seeing each other when the video came on, Jimmy was wearing a red hat and I'm like, what is happening? It's not a black hat that has his name on it. I don't understand.
No, yeah. Usually I have a camo hat, but it's so dirty. It looks black.
So it's colder where you guys are than where I am.
My clock says 10 degrees right now.
Your clock. Man,
well,
northern clocks are weird.
Modern times. I'm pointing at my wristwatch.
Yeah.
It is. Clock, everything says everything.
It is 23 degrees here, which is kind of a heat wave as of late, but it's going to be 11 below in a couple of days. And
how many
house,
below?
11 below.
Oh.
Zero. That's below zero.
Not below the current temperature.
Yeah. Guys. And so, of course, our furnace went out. Our house is heated with two furnaces, and one of them went out. It's not an emergency, but it affects the whole house. The company can't come out until next week, so we're just, I don't know, it's time for a vacation.
Yeah, sounds like
but it. But you were saying Kentucky is about to get plowed.
Yeah, I mean, who knows if it'll actually happen, but the model is, today is Wednesday, and for the model for this weekend says that where I live is going to get 27 inches of snow between Saturday and Sunday, which I was telling you all earlier.
I don't think I heard you right. How many inches?
27 inches, which is just, it seems impossible. I mean, you know, up in Vermont or something, maybe, yeah, it's a Tuesday for them. But here, you know, if we get, this morning school was canceled and we have about a quarter inch, maybe a quarter inch on the ground. You know, it's just like it started overnight. It's going to be done in 10 minutes or so. It's going to be 40 degrees today. And they were like, nope, no school. Nope. Stay home. So, yeah, this weekend might be, you may never hear from me again. We're just not made for, you know, this. When I was in high school, I told you guys this earlier. When I was in high school, actually, this is kind of a funny story that I've probably told before, but I'm going to tell it again. So my senior year of high school, I was in a band. Was in a rebellious, you know, like, I'm just going to be me phase, whatever. And on a Friday afternoon, I think it was a Friday afternoon, I came home from school and I was like, I'm going to dye my hair. I had long rock and roll hair at the time. So I went to the store with my buddy, got some red hair dye, came home, dyed my hair. Cool. And then my parents came home in the evening. And they saw it and they were like, you're grounded for a week.
How old were
like,
you?
Like, no.
20?
I was, no. I was like 16 or 17.
I'm kidding.
And
25.
And so I would have been 16. Yeah. Cause I turned 17 the year after I graduated from high school. So they grounded me. This is like on a Friday or whatever day it was. They grounded me and then. About an hour later, it started snowing and we got 15 inches of snow and everything in our town just stopped for a week. So I was grounded for a week, but there was nowhere to go. Like there was no school, there was no church, there was no anything. I couldn't rollerblade. I couldn't play music. Yeah, it was just like,
nobody could see your awesome hair though.
I know it didn't look as cool a week later, but
you had roots anyway. By the time you came out.
Yeah. So that was the only time that I remember getting a significant amount of snow.
Have you guys seen what's going on in Russia? Is this real or is it fake? Have you seen these images in Russia? Oh, you guys, your algorithm.
I don't watch the news.
Yeah.
No, Google it. I'm telling you, Google it right now. The Russian snow.
What, Russia? What am I Googling?
Russian snow drifts. They're as tall as buildings.
Oh.
It looks like, what is that movie where the end of the world because of the weather?
Oh, the last day on Earth or
yeah. It looks like that, where like the snow drifts are as high as 8-story buildings.
I mean, I would admit, you know, part of Russia is like way up there. So that seems reasonable, I guess.
You guys.
Anyway, this weekend we're going to have a lot of snow. I don't think we'll have 27 inches, but I do think we'll have a lot. It's funny because a couple videos ago when I was putting the roof on or I don't know when that was. I was putting the roof on the pool house. I made a comment in the video that, like, you know, you should do this and you should do this, but it really depends on the snow loads where you live. And where I live, we don't really get much snow. So this morning, Anthony texted me and he was like, hope those snow loads are still going to work, you know, with what you were planning for the roof, because we might get a lot. But anyway.
Yeah.
Dumb.
So snow for me. That's probably what
some of these are AI. Some of them aren't.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's wild. You know, I don't trust pictures on phones anymore.
I know,
at all.
There's no way you can.
Isn't that weird that it feels like it happened really quickly to where I just assumed that that's fake.
That's what I said, but everyone says it's real.
I'm sure there are some, I'm not saying that.
It could be pumped up. It could be like, it's not that high.
Yeah. But it's just weird that we got to a place really quickly where at least I just assumed that everything is not true to what you see. It may be embellished. It may be whatever, slightly edited. It may be completely fake, but it's just weird that we got there. So other than the weather, what have you guys been up to?
What have I been up to? I've been playing with my new CNC machine. I'm going to be doing a 12-episode series on the Infinity machine, the Onefinity. And so I've been playing with that. Everybody wants a sewer cap. I made the sewer cap in the video again, which is what I made a year ago. But last year, I used it as a form to make a cast steel one. This year, I played around with it, and I filled it with resin. And everybody wants one. So I started cutting out of scrap pieces, any scrap piece that's over 20 inches that just has been sitting around. I'm cutting it to a 20-inch square and throwing it on the CNC machine. So up till now, I made about 7 of them. They take 2.5 hours to cut. I just hit start and walk away, kind of like a 3D printer. And then I come back, brush it off and sand it, and then paint it with spar varnish just to seal the MDF. It's all MDF. And it's funny, last year I did it, no one really paid attention, I guess because they understand making it in steel was complicated. But now my net result was made in MDF CNC, and suddenly everybody wants one. Not everybody. I've gotten about 15 requests, so that's why I'm going to just make a bunch.
I have an idea.
Yeah.
Just another offshoot of the idea that you're already working on. With the pattern that's on that and all of the depth of the little, you know, details and stuff, it would be cool to make a silicone version of it as an epoxy mat, because it would have all that depth to let the extra epoxy fall down in, and then you can
like
pull
that.
It out. And
use
that. You know, you could make what you already have and just extend it into a silicone version.
I thought about that, and then maybe making them in plaster or something simple and cheap versus because you could get the epoxies. It's because it takes a lot. It takes at least a gallon of volume.
Well, I don't mean like epoxy to make the caps. I mean, make the cap as the silicone mat for you to do epoxy work on top of. And then when you're done and it all cures, you could just peel it out of the cap and throw it away.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. So, well, the ones I'm going to offer for sale, I'm not going to put epoxy on because it's just too complicated. So I'm just going to offer just the CNC painted ones or even the natural ones. And just to see if anybody wants them, I just got to come up with a price because it does take some time and energy.
$1 million.
I would like to make one for $1 million. Make it out of pure gold.
You just have to sell one. Like, surely you could find
scrape together gold. And but besides that, this week I made a jacket. I've never sewed a jacket. And we could talk more about this when we get to the subject, but I say it all the time. When there's something that's holding you up, it might be conscious or unconscious, but there's always one thing that's keeping you from moving forward on the project. And in this case, it was sewing the sleeve on. So I started playing around with making this jacket about a week ago, and then I just put it to the side and I got a little uptight about it. And I really said, what is it about this project that's making me uptight? And it was sewing the sleeve on. It made me nervous that I was going to mess it up. And like I said, we'll talk more about that when we get to that part of the subject today. But on Sunday, it was a snow day here. I said, let me just go to it and play with it. And so I ended up finishing the jacket to some extent. I could still tweak it, but it came out great. Much better than I anticipated. At the last minute, I decided to use a different material. I was going to use something else, but I was like, let me just use this other stuff, try this. And there's a couple of really interesting, fast, last-minute decisions, but I ended up coming up with a semi-successful jacket for me for the very first attempt. And I was happy with it. But so I made the jacket, and now I'm just making sewer caps. I'm just running the CNC, cleaning up a little bit. And we're getting some severe cold here as well. So I've got to prep for that and get rid of snow that was going to be, this snow in certain spots that is just going to become perpetual ice. So I'm going to do that.
How does that affect like your birds and stuff? Like, do you have to do anything? You just have to make sure they have water that's not frozen?
Yeah. I have a horse trough with a heater in it. Hmm. It's just a thing you throw into a regular trough. So the trough is just a regular metal tub, like you've seen some of the guys make hot tubs out of. And I keep it filled. Or on the farm, I have about 4 taps. They're all weather taps. And it's interesting so that if you have just a regular garden hose coming to a wall, if the whole building isn't heated, it'll freeze. But these are farm taps, and they're on a pipe that goes into the ground about 4 feet below the surface of the ground. There is a big drain pit, and it's just a big bunch of gravel. So when you pull open the spigot, it pulls open the spigot 4 or 5 feet in the ground, and water flows up the pipe, and so you're able to get regular running unfrozen water in any temperature. And then when you shut the spigot off, it drains 4 feet down into the drain pit.
Oh,
so the origin of the water is below the surface of the freeze line. And so I have water right outside by there. Prior to that, every couple of days, I jug up some water and splash it all on my legs walking out there. That was a real pain. So now I have that. So it makes life a lot easier. We just finally turned that on. Those are all connected last summer. Finally, because it was a complicated network. So there's a whole network of pipes under the backyard. They came into the water pit, and I finally paid the plumber to connect it all. It was very complicated.
The archaeological expedition on your property in 300 years is going to be fascinating.
Yeah. And it's funny. I have to remember there's a gas line there. There's a gas line there. There's a gas line there. There's water lines here. There's water lines there. There's electrical lines everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of snakes underground here, but they're all fairly deep. Well, you're going to laugh. So the TV show off subject, the TV show needed, when they first put the TV show, they put the 2 53-foot trailers in the backyard, and day one, a diesel truck showed up with a generator on the back. And they started the generator, and everyone's like, when is that going to be turned off? They're like, never. It's going to be on until the production's over. Like, that diesel thing's going to run 24 hours a day for the next 3 months? They're like, yeah, that's why we need electric. And then they started talking, and they came to me, and they're like, can we tap onto your electrical grid? I'm like, sure, I don't care, whatever. They said, we'll pay the bill. So they hired Patrick to go buy like a $2,000 wire, connected to the garage, and in a huff, we all quickly buried it in the ground, like just below the surface of the grass, and wrapped it all the way around the yard to where the trailers were. And then my electric bill for 3 months was like $1,000 a month for 3 months, but they paid it. But that big, thick electrical wire was in the ground. And just at the end of the summer, I'm driving my Kubota with the forks, and I'm driving, and I'm like, all four wheels are spinning. I'm like, why am I not moving? And I get out, and there's this big giant wire hooked on the forks of the tractor. The tractor was scraping the ground a little bit and picked up the wire. It wasn't connected. Oh. Patrick disconnected it from the electric. There was nothing at the other end. The trailers were gone. So he said, we'll pull it out of the ground and wrap it up. It's very expensive. We could shade it in or use it for some other building. But it was funny. I dragged it, and it had pulled. So when I realized it was when I backed out, and now I had like 6 feet of it bunched up. And it's so thick, it's like just thinner than like your wrist. So it's hard to wrap up. You can't do anything with it. It's wire that it's like an inch and a quarter thick or inch and a half thick.
Oh my gosh.
And it's like solid copper. So now I get this big wire sticking up out of the grass, and it's like 50 feet that way and 100 feet that way. So it's hard for me to wrap it up. Anyway, that's my wire story. Hope you enjoyed it.
I did. I most certainly did.
David, what have you been up to? Released a cool video.
What's that?
I said you released a cool video.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Maybe you saw it. Not a lot of people saw that video.
Hmm.
But, so I released the video on the Aero lamp, and it came out really good. I was, I can't remember if I told this last week, but I'm working with the new camera person. Mm-hmm. And, I was telling him that, you know, this is coming out better than I expected. And he's like, that probably is like all your projects. And I'm like, no, that never happens. Usually there's some sort of flaw in every single project that makes me hate it, or not hate it. That's a strong word, but let's just use that word. But usually there's something on every project that I dislike about it. And this one came out really good. Although I am going to shorten the bass. It's a little too tall, but it was good enough for the video. And, but I'm gonna shorten the bass. I do want to go back, and this is the difference between Jimmy DiResta and David Picciuto. Jimmy was mentioning like scraps that are over 20 inches long. And to me, those aren't scraps. Those are just pieces of wood. for me, scraps are 5 inches and smaller.
I'll explain, but go ahead.
No, that's all. I want to hear your explanation of scraps that are over 2 feet long.
At the other shop is the 5x10 CNC. So this is the shop down the block, and that's where there's all, but everything's bigger sized over there. So between me and Ryan and a couple other people that use the CNC machine, we'll throw a piece of MDF on the CNC machine, cut the couple pieces we need out of it. And now it's a half a sheet, or it's a long skinny piece that's like 2x8, 2 feet by 8. And then it goes into the, portico, which is outside, half outside, and it gets bird poop on it, and it gets a sag in it from leaning on the wall and the weather. And those pieces then get disregarded. And it's then, even though it's a fresh, good piece of wood, but because it's got a big curve in it from leaning on the wall, nobody ever grabs it. They always just grab another fresh, flat sheet of MDF. I got about 20, 30 sheets of MDF leaning on the wall from all different projects. Anytime I have a project, if I need 5 sheets of plywood, I usually will buy like 8, and then the 3 sit there for like an emergency project. And that same thing with MDF. So anytime me or Ryan cut something and there's a substantial piece left over and we don't store it properly, that basically becomes a work table for another project to paint on or something. And that's what this MDF was. So it is scrap in the regards of it's not fresh and new, but it is totally usable.
Here's this thing that I do a lot is I sold all the go-kart stuff, but I still have the go-kart trailer. So it's a great place to put stuff. And when I buy plywood, I'll always buy like an extra sheet or two because things happen, or it's just nice to have something on hand.
Yeah.
But what has happened is the trailer is so full of plywood, some of it's partly cut up, some of it's full sheets, that it's really hard to get anything out of the trailer. So instead of messing with it, I'll just go get a new sheet because it's going to take me too long to get it out of there.
I do the same exact thing.
The trailer is backed up to the garage, so the back door that comes down is it doesn't come down unless I attach the hitch to the truck. I bring the truck around. I got to pull the trailer out 10 feet. If I can't get it out of the little door on the side, it's not worth it, especially in the wintertime.
I have a few abandoned plywood piles, believe it or not, in the shipping container. They all just get crowded with so much stuff. There's like 5 sheets of plywood in one of the shipping containers that I can't get at because it's got so many things in front of it now.
Eventually, David's going to hook up the trailer, drive it to the dump, and then open the back, and then just pull forward really fast, and all the stuff is just going to fall.
That would be great. I remember like 10 years ago when Jay Bates got some sort of plywood sponsorship, and he got like a lifetime supply of plywood. I was so jealous. And now I would be like, no, I don't. I do not want that.
We got plywood delivered yesterday, and it's a forklift pallet. Ryan and I both ordered a bunch of plywood, and it's a giant. It's like as much as as big of a car. It's as big as a car.
Our plywood dealer will deliver. I think it's $50 a delivery, which ain't too bad. But it's $50 whether you get one piece or you get a whole pallet. Mm-hmm. So it's rare that I have a delivery, but I will do it every once in a while. The project I'm working on right now is a shoe bench for the lake house. And the shoe bench is a pretty simple design. And so to make it a little bit more interesting for me, I drew up this like lake canoe sunset scene in Illustrator. And I'm cutting that out on the scroll saw and piecing that together, and it's going to go on one end. And I don't think the edit will be done in time for this weekend, but that is what I'm working on.
Cool. Well, let's see. What about me? The video that was supposed to come out last week and it kind of just fell behind is doing all the soffit and tongue and groove. I think I talked about that, you know, for the building. And I still haven't gotten out there to finish putting on. I had to order more spar varnish to put on the tongue and groove. And so I get like half of it done and it's been out there and now it's super cold. So I've got to get out there and finish that so that that whole section is actually completely done. But the video should be out this weekend, I think. But since then, there's been several things going on. So I tried to boil wood because I was going to see if you guys had any other ideas on this. I have this little fish tank. It's maybe, I don't know, 7 or 8 gallons or something like that. It's a little vertical rectangle. So it's kind of tall and skinny. And it was one of my old tanks that I took down for a while and now I'm setting it up again. And so I wanted to have, we had these roots pulled out of the ground when we had the pool put in. And they're real gnarly looking and, you know, just crazy shapes and stuff. And so I cut down a couple of pieces that would fit vertically in this thing. And so I was trying to get them to go in to be some nature and then I put a bunch of plants around them and all that type of stuff. And these things have been sitting out above ground since summer. I don't know. And so I knew that they would not sink immediately, but I put them in the tank, let them soak for several days and they didn't budge, like didn't even start to go down. And so I went to Walmart last night and bought, or yesterday, and then bought the biggest like stock pot that I could get, which was probably, I don't really know, like 18 inches wide and 20 something inches tall, so that they both fit in there, fill it up with water, and then tried to boil it. And that's one of the things that a lot of people who have fish tanks do to get water to saturate, is they boil so that the air will release out of the inside of it, you know, it replaces with water and then so it sinks. And so I've boiled it multiple times over the last few days and our kitchen smells terrible. Like it smells so bad. It's gross. And I did get the kids pretty good yesterday though, because they came home from school and there's this giant pot and I'm like, oh man, you guys gotta look what I've been working on. Come over here. And like, it's like soup or something. I'm like, come take a whiff. And they come lean in and I open it and then it's just like this barf smell right up in their nose.
Dad, a fun come thing on, Dad.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, so I've been boiling this, like I'll boil it for a little while and then let it sit in the hot and then I'll boil it again a couple hours later, thinking, you know, it's trying to just move the air that's on the inside of these pieces. And it has not budged at all. It's not sinking. And I don't really know what else to do. The other option would be to just like attach them to rocks and put them in this tank, but it's a very small tank. So I don't have a lot of, you know, vertical space to, or even horizontal space to attach, like glue it to rocks to get it to sink. So you have any ideas for getting wood to sink?
I would assume you'd put it, screw it to a big flat. So you give it a flat bottom and then cover the flat bottom with all the gravel at the bottom of the thing. Yeah. So you know, you have like a big flat piece and then you stick it onto that and then just cover that with your debris at the bottom of the tank.
Yeah, and that might be what I have to do. But
you, that would have to be plastic or something. It can't be steel. Obviously, it's going to be in water.
Yeah, but then that wouldn't, like, I don't think the substrate is going to be heavy enough to actually hold that down. Because these are big, you know, this stuff is like this thick. I mean, these are big pieces. Because I'm trying to make it look like it's a tree root, not just a little twig. So
Yeah.
And a lot of people will take slate or some really flat type of,
that's an idea,
you know, stone, and glue it to that, because apparently CA glue is a really common thing for people getting things to stick together. David, do you have an idea?
Would there's a technique that some plane makers use where, and I don't know if this would make it float or sink, but where they take wood and they put it in a vacuum to soak out all the air, and then they use a penetrating epoxy to harden the wood. I don't know how science works, so I don't know if that would make it float even more, or if it would cause it to sink to the bottom.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that's kind of what I was going for, that idea, not with the vacuum, because my vacuum container is too small, I think. Maybe it's not. Wait. Hmm. Now I'm remembering, because I have a pressure pot and I have a vacuum pot. And those are different. And now I'm thinking that my vacuum is actually the bigger one. And so even if you vacuumed it with water in it, it would still pull the air and let the water replace it. So that actually might be the... Okay. Thank you.
Well, you could also put it in your aquarium that you're going to use, and maybe that is your vacuum pot, and you just seal the lid on top of that, right? If your current container is not big enough.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I wonder if I could, or even the steel pot that it's in. I wonder if that, anyway, yeah, I'll keep thinking on that. Yeah. But that's one thing I've been kind of wrestling with the last couple of days. I've got a Formlabs printer on the way, a Form 4.
Oh, yeah, I got one. Those are cool. I got the 3, I think.
I've been talking to them for a while about, you know, they've been asking me if I have any ideas for how it would be usable and stuff. And I had not really ever come up with an idea that couldn't work otherwise. You know, like every other, I'm kind of looking at tools that way now. When somebody wants to give me a tool, I don't have room for tools. I don't really want any more tools. But if there's a tool that allows me to do something that I don't have another way to do, then I'm starting to consider it. It's kind of like the metal fab was like, there's no way for me to laser cut steel. I just don't have another way to do it. So that was an easy yes. Anyway, so the Formlabs, I've been thinking about a couple of projects that I don't want to give away yet for the fish tank stuff. And there may be other ways to do it, but waterproof 3D prints or watertight 3D prints are practically impossible with an FDM printer. Like you can print something and then you can epoxy coat it to kind of try to seal it up and everything, but then you start to lose precision on the print size and any fittings because you've got this other layer that you didn't account for. And so this, with the Formlabs printer, any resin printer, you can print watertight objects. Mm-hmm. So I'm working on an idea. It's been an idea for a long time.
Boat?
And then, no. And then I was able to finally put together it in my head, the idea and the use case, you know? And so now it's this thing that is just, it was always in the background and now it's foreground and now it's in my head and I can't think about anything else because there's all this but how do I connect to the thing? And then what do I need for the thing? And, you know, and it's exciting because it's an idea that I think is really cool and interesting and complex, but now I can't think about anything else because I just gotta figure it out, and I don't have the printer yet, so I can't, you know, I can't go too far. Like I can model things, but I can't test anything yet. I don't have the electronics that I'm looking for. There's stuff, so that's been an interesting thing to have on my mind for a few days, and I still got a lot of figuring out to do, but I'm excited about that one. And I hope I can figure out how to make it interesting enough to where people will be interested to see the process, even if they don't have, if they don't care about the object, you know, if they don't care about the fish tank or the thing. I want to make the process interesting enough, which again, you know, we've talked about this a million times, like that is the goal, to figure out how to make the process of something interesting enough to overcome the object itself. And so, yeah, I'm that's another, figuring out the technical aspects of it are one big thing that's on my mind. The other thing is the packaging and the how do you connect people to it? So working on that. We are fostering a puppy right now, which I didn't send you guys pictures of. I probably should have.
Well, yes. And,
so we have two big dogs that are 4 years old or so. Oh, look at that puppy. And so we have two big dogs. And we keep, Jenny and I just send each other pictures of puppies all the time that are on Facebook. You know, like there's a local rescue and then there's a lost and found locally. And the place we take our dogs for like boarding when we go out of town, they rescue dogs. And so like we're always finding cute little puppies and sending it kind of as a joke to each other. So she found this one that somebody dumped in somebody else's backyard. Like they reached it over a fence, set it in a backyard and left.
That's horrible.
Well, I mean, it's horrible that they didn't want it, but it's good that they didn't just like throw it in the street. They put it in somebody's yard so it would be found, you know? And anyway, so she found this picture, lost and found, and sent it to me, and I thought it was funny and cute. And then I, we were talking about it, and then, oh, it's at the place where we take the dogs all the time. Oh, the kids are going to school. We don't have anything to do this Friday morning. We should go look at the dog. We should just go. It's just cute. Let's go look at it. So then we left with the dog. And, you know, it was like, well, we'll just take it home for the weekend and we'll foster it. You need help taking care of it. So we'll take it home, see how it does with the dogs, but we'll probably bring it back on Monday. And so today is Wednesday.
Yeah. That's so, how fostering works.
Yeah. So, and we've never really fostered dogs. Because of this, I don't want to get stuck with more animals. Like there was one weekend where we had three little puppies because we knew that we were going to get them on Saturday and they were going to leave on Monday and because they were going to somebody else. And that's different. But
what kind of puppy is it?
I don't know. He's got double dew claws on his back paws, which means that he's probably part Pyrenees, which is like my favorite kind of dog. Or there's a couple other breeds that are big breeds like mountain breeds that have dew claws, and so he's partially that, and then the other part I don't know, like maybe lab, maybe pit.
So he's not going to be small.
No, he's going to be a big boy. I'll show you a picture just because
I was hoping.
I'm trying not to pass around pictures of everybody because I don't
that finalize the deal.
Yeah, but he's so cute. Hang on, let me find a good one. I've got a lot of pictures of him from the last couple of days.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my good. With the sunbeam. Oh, yeah, are you kidding me?
Picture. Yeah. Yeah. And he's like,
you're going to have a hard time letting go of him.
You already had professional photography taken of the dog? Yeah, you're keeping him.
We had a session.
Glamour shot.
Yeah, I mean, he's just so adorable. Now, of course, he's a puppy, so, you know, I haven't had a puppy in a long time. He's 10 weeks old. And so we're immediately reminded about, oh, yeah, they're super bitey, and their teeth are like little razor blades, and, you know, the older dogs, who are not really older dogs, but they're older than he is, they are not excited that he's around. So that's one hang-up that we're kind of wrestling with, is we don't want to make our other dogs stressed out and... You know, we don't want to like ruin what we have, like how comfortable everything is with the older dogs and stuff. So, but I think all of that will pass in time. But he's rowdy and he's like up in their face and all over.
So you're keeping him. You're keeping him.
Probably. Yeah.
You're talking about future situation. You're talking about his college career already.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's been a big thing that occupies a lot of my attention and time and stuff for the last few days. The other thing, though, is, and this might lead into kind of what we were going to talk about today. Remember a few weeks ago, I said I had the big transformer on my desk and I was talking about how, like, I would love to customize this thing and paint it, but I couldn't figure out how to make a video about it and I didn't think it'd be interesting to people. After I said that on the show, I got several messages from people from patrons, but also just like emails and stuff from people saying, I don't care about transformers, but please do that video. And I was like, oh, dang. Like that's hard. But I think that the sentiment that came through was like, we can hear that you're excited about it. So just make the video because that's the thing, you know, and yeah, it was just a lot of encouragement from not like a million people or anything, but like a handful of people were very encouraging to just do the thing. And so it's beginning of the year. I was looking at kind of what I'm working on and, you know, what's left on the pool house and what the weather's like and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I should just do this thing. And then I started thinking more about it. Anyway, I did it and I finished that video in just a couple of days. And I think it looks awesome. Like, I'm really excited about how it turned out. And tried to make the video less about the transformer and more about just, you know, how we think about the stuff that we have and whether it's, whether we try to, like, how, why are things precious? And at what point is it not worth having something be precious to you, but instead be what you want? And that's really evident to me when I look at the things that I've collected for my life, like the toys, like some of the stuff back here in my toy collection is because there's nostalgia to it. There's this, you know, maybe it was something I didn't have when I was a kid that I always wanted, or something I had and lost, or some of it is for preservation's sake. Like, I have a R2-D2 action figure on the card with the sticker on it from the store in a case, because like that thing, even though it's just a thing, those don't exist very much anymore. Like, that piece from that time, they become fewer and fewer. There's so many things like that. And so I like the thing. I have memories with the thing. And so there's part of me that wants to preserve the thing for that sake. And sure. Then there's this new toy, this transformer that I got that was like, it's a new thing and it reminds me of my childhood, but it's not ever going to be worth anything. It's not, you know, it's not valuable from a monetary standpoint or like a historical toy standpoint or anything. And so instead of just being like, yeah, now I have this thing that I'm going to set in the corner and not really, it doesn't need to be precious. It can be what I think it should be. And so that was the idea of I'm trying to get that idea across in making, you know, the thing that I want. But all that to say, I really appreciate the people that listen to this and the people that watch our stuff and the... Mm-hmm. It's easy to be like a consumer of content and to just like let it hit you or let it not hit you, right? From the consumer's perspective, like sometimes it matters to them, sometimes it doesn't, but they don't have to give us feedback. They don't have to give us encouragement. They don't have to care about what we care about. But I mean, we get messages and comments and stuff all the time that are encouraging and that are like, I hear you sounding this way, good or bad or whatever. And here's what I think. Here's what you know, are trying to give you encouragement. I'm trying to help you along, trying to give you ideas. Stuff like that is so cool. And it's easy to forget about the fact that we have these people who don't have to care, but they still care enough to like give us feedback in a positive way and encourage us to do things that we talk about and stuff. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Something that is not a big deal swirls in my head and becomes a bigger deal, you know, in a good way. So I'm just thank you to everybody that encouraged me to do something as simple as that. Cause It means more than the video, right? It means more than the work. That encouragement is really, really cool. Same goes for the Transformer in the Woods thing, the whole like dead robot in the woods.
Yeah.
I'm still getting comments on that. I'm still getting messages on that. And
sorry about
that. In my mind, not committing to it, but in my mind, it's moved from a, nah, that'd be cool, but I'm never going to do that, to like,
how build that before you build the suspension bridge.
Yeah. Probably should. Although it would be easier to get to the place I want to put it with the suspension bridge.
Oh, that's fine. So you're already creating barriers. I see.
No. That's not a barrier. That is a... If I don't have the suspension bridge, I don't know how I would get materials to that place.
That's part of the video. If I were to build that is part of the video.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Or you do both in one. You have to build the suspension bridge to make the dead robot. Yeah. That's a story. That's an hour and a half video right there.
Yeah. That an hour and a half video is a scary commitment, man.
Yeah.
I don't know how people do stuff like that and that's another thing about both of those ideas, as I've thought a little bit more through them and thought, you know, like, okay, well, what if I did? The commitment to time and money to a degree, but really the time commitment and editing and like, it feels like a lot of eggs in one basket for either one of those ideas, you know, to kind of work or not work. I don't know. anyway, I appreciate the encouragement from everybody on those things. It does mm-hmm. matter. So thank you. Yeah, that's kind of what I've been working on. And I think there was the reason I brought up the transformer thing in regard to what we were going to talk about is because after I got over the hurdle of starting it, there was a lot of freedom and a lot of like fun in just sitting yeah. there and heads down and just doing that little concentrated one spot on the bench kind of work, you know? And I kind of got lost in it because I would spend a couple hours just like detail painting and playing around and stuff. And so, Jimmy, you were kind of talking about something before we started recording similar to that.
Yep. I was talking about how Sunday was a snow day and I had this hurdle was keeping me from working on the jacket project. And every once in a while, I've talked about this a lot. You really have to stop and ask yourself, why am I not getting back to the Carmen Ghia? Why am I not getting back to this or that?
Way to call me out. Appreciate that.
No, because I could see, we could all see you struggling with that. And it's you know, it's not anything that we all don't encounter. I'm having it right now with the tow truck. It's because of the wheel bearing thing. I'm like, I don't know. Rob saved me, you know. It's like, I don't know what to do with the wheel bearing thing till the wheel bearing thing is figured out. So it just sits undone. And in this case, it was, how do you sew a sleeve on? I keep looking on YouTube and trying to find like how, and then I saw one visual from one person without even listening to it. And that, I'm like, that's how you sew a sleeve on. I never understood how to sew a sleeve on. And I saw one quickie. I always credit Cornelius Quiring. He's amazing. I've mentioned him several times and even in my Instagram post, and he's been great. I just couldn't find that one visual that triggered, and I just saw it in somebody else's reel, and I was like, aha, that's how you do it. And I said, Sunday, snow day, let me just go out and play with this jacket idea. Now that hurdle that's been hurdling me, that's a good title. Hurdle me.
Okay.
I'm just thinking.
One more time.
I went out and I just started playing and I said, you know what? I don't care how this comes out. I'll film it anyway, but I don't care how it comes out. I don't care if I ever make the video. I don't care if I ever finish it, but let me just document it just to have as extra content. And I documented the process kind of surveillance style, because I only had the GoPro out in the shop. I didn't have my detail camera. And I made a jacket that came out okay. It didn't come out perfect. And there were things that I knew I just didn't know how to solve. So I just let them not hold me back. And then it got to the end of the day and I didn't have a long enough zipper. I needed a 24-inch zipper to go from the front to the bottom. And I said, can I put an 18-inch zipper and then like put a button below that or a button above that? I was like, that's kind of hokey. And I was like, let me go to Walmart and see. So I went to Walmart around here, closes at 11. So Sunday night, I went to Walmart at 10 o'clock. They had two 24-inch zippers in the craft aisle. And I got home and I went out there in the next morning and I did it and it worked. And it's not perfect. The zipper is just sewn onto the surface. It's not hidden by any liner or anything. But I was like, yeah, that's another hurdle. I don't know how to completely finish all these edges. When you look at a garment, there's no open seams anywhere. Like I'm wearing a piece of cohort. There's no end of the garment next to the stitch line. Everything's completely enclosed. And I don't understand how that's done yet. But the more I dig into it, the more I'll learn. The whole point is, when I finally let go and said, I don't care what happens to this project, the project started to flow. And it's a thing we all talk about. And even you let go of not worrying about what people think of you doing a, you know, what you otherwise would have thought was an insignificant project. And then you got into that flow state. And it goes back to that joke I've said before. It's, I finally decided to be perfect. How many people that we know, as an example, want to start a YouTube channel, but they need the perfect project or they need the perfect camera. And so I made that joke today. I finally decided I'm going to be perfect. So that means I can get started. It's never going to happen. Just get into it and just do it. And by my own example, the other day, it was really that hurdle of how do you sew a sleeve on and what is the mechanics behind sewing a sleeve and not getting, my fear was I was going to sew And then I was going to have like an extra inch of material that I don't know what to do with. So my sleeve's going to have a pucker in it. It's going to be like, how do you know this? And that's, I learned that actually watching Cornelius, the length of this opening compared to the length of this opening. How do you know they're the same?
Oh, yeah.
And there was a couple simple methods on how to measure that, which didn't occur to me.
Tell me, how do you do that?
Oh, well, he just said you lay out your pattern and you get the soft ruler, the ruler, like a tailor's ruler that would go around your chest or your arm, that flat tape, and you just hold it on the line and you just move it along as you go.
Oh.
I always thought there was some magic to it. I thought there was like some tool with like a rolling wheel. There probably is, but I haven't seen that. But I always assumed there was a rolling wheel tool that you could just run on the pattern. And by the time you get, it'll say 7 inches, and then you zero it again, and then you roll it on your other pattern, and it says 7 inches. And so, oh, and then I ordered, now I'm excited. So I ordered on Amazon a 6 foot roll, 30 yards of canvas, white canvas. And it was cheap. It was like $200. And now I have plenty of fabric to play with. So I'm going to go back into the same pattern and play around with trying to improve that pattern, or just make the same jacket 3 or 4 times just to understand where I could make changes and how I can make changes as I'm sewing, to understand, like, if I make this seam a little bit, take more seam allowance on this side and this side. So I'm excited to get into it. So I all that being said, I had a breakthrough because I stopped worrying about the outcome.
I think, and this is where I could use some good advice, that's a lot easier to just remove expectations and perfection on something you've never done before, because this is this new thing. These are new tools. This is new material to me. But how do you do that with something that you always do, like with woodworking? Because I have high expectations when I go to make something out of wood, or if I'm combining two things, like, oh, I've done this, this should come out perfect. How do I get rid of that, those little barriers that I create?
Well, I mean, in your case, I could give you a little encouragement. Just look at your body of work. Your work is always clean. It's always mid-century, modern, beautiful, walnut. It always looks good. I mean, except for the pencil holder with the crayons on it. That's really, that looks good in its own universe. But the point I'm making is,
so much.
You know, you just got to look back at your body of work sometimes to boost your own confidence.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You're still here. You've been doing it. We've been at this for 10 plus years. All three of us. We're still here.
There's Well, real quick, my response to that would be, I've seen you make things expecting it to come out one way and then not, and then you pivoting or remaking it and then getting to the thing that you want. So my encouragement would be, like, the pressure you feel to get it right the first time is maybe the bigger thing you should try to avoid, because you can always fix it. You can always remake
right,
it. You've
right.
proven that. And so I don't think you even necessarily feel like you shouldn't feel like you have to get it right the first time, because you're going to get there eventually.
Right.
Again, like he said, based on your track record. So that would be my encouragement.
I have this personal embarrassment about certain things. Like, okay, I've been playing guitar for, I don't know, 30 some years, but my skill doesn't show that I've been playing guitar for 30 some years. So same. It would be really hard for me to tell somebody, yeah, I've been playing guitar for 30 some years, and their expectations are going to be like, let's jam. I'm like, oh yeah, I can't jam.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. But, you know, at the same time, I don't know. We put so much pressure on ourselves to be good at things rather than just do them. And I think, like, one of my sons does this with soccer. Instead of it being a game, a thing that is fun, a thing that is exercise, a thing that comes and goes and is not going to define him throughout his life, it's just a thing. The pressure he puts on himself to be good at it destroys a lot of the joy of doing it. And so, I truly think that is a decision we get to make. I think a lot of people feel compelled to be really good at something, or to be disappointed in themselves about something, or to feel a certain way. But I truly do think we get to decide how we feel. And that's work. I'm not saying it's just like a switch you can flip, but I don't know. Like, I'm the same way with guitar. I've been playing for a really long time. I've been in multiple bands. I've recorded multiple albums. Somebody asks me to play in front of them, and I'm like, I don't think that's a good idea. I'm just not, you know, and it's the same thing. I never took it past a certain point of skill or whatever, because I didn't have to. It was just fun. It was just music. It's just, and so the pressure, you know, you can put on yourself in that situation is, yes, I have to measure up to the expectation of other people that they assume I have, or not. I could just decide not to and sure. Let it be what it is. And so, like, for my kids, that's been a top of mind thing lately is, you know, I don't care if you're good at something. Just do it. Just try it. Just have fun and then do something else. And, you know, you don't have to prove your skill level, your value, your worth through performance on any of this stuff. And I think a lot of times as adults, we forget that as well. And we think that, especially when we do something publicly, feel like we have to maintain a certain level of quality or experience or authority or whatever. And man, the other day, I was talking to a guy that I know at a soccer game, and he said, I watched your video recently about the building, and I love the fact that you said to the camera that you had no idea what you were doing. It made me enjoy the video so much. And I was like, good, because I have no idea what I'm doing. But that disarms the entire thing. Not that everybody has to say that, but by me saying that in a video, that disarms the part of me that it's like, oh, I got to get this right. Oh, this is on YouTube. People are going to see it and they're going to tell me I'm an idiot if I do it wrong. Yeah, they might, but like I prefaced it. I told you I was going to do it wrong. I told you I don't know what I'm doing. And so I think, you know, giving ourselves some permission to like not be good at guitar, but still enjoy doing
it. Well, you have to, the joke is you have to dance like nobody's watching. And it's the same thing with making, you know, that's a stupid slang. You know, that's like a stupid thing, a refrigerator magnet, dance like nobody's watching. But it's really what it's like in the shop and your creativity.
And that's actually really, that's a really good point, because if you replace dance with make in our thing, we make because people are watching. But if we did it as if people weren't.
Yeah.
That's very different.
And I was going to say, I think we could all speak from experience, is the ones that fail, the ones that you're just literally bearing your soul, those are the ones that most people remember. Those are the videos that people remember the most. And, you know, I joked about the cup just now, but honestly, I mean, it's like, it stands out as a learning lesson. Just whatever. You don't know. It's hard sometimes to define exactly what that lesson is, but they stick with you for one reason or another.
I can't remember if you said this before the podcast or on the podcast, but you're saying like you're trying to figure out how to frame the video because it's just the shot of you.
Sewing
this jacket. Yeah. And I'm actually looking forward to the video because, you know, I've been teetering for years of like, I want a sewing machine, but I don't have a reason to get a sewing machine yet. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to encourage a lot of people to try something new if they see you just like removing all expectations and just making something for the fun of making something. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, multiple camera angles and a, you know, well-produced video. I think there's going to be a lot of value to that particular video.
Oh, thank you. That's good to hear. Mm-hmm. And I did have one hurdle that besides the idea of just not knowing at all what I was doing. The sewing machine, I love the 330 from Weaver. It is a great machine and it's been amazing. In this instant, I kept having trouble with it. And I think it's because my bobbin is worn out. My bobbin holder is this like a little, so I'd stick it in and then I'd go to sew. And then if you've ever sewn and you feel that hesitation in the machine, and then you're like, what in the world? And you pull it and there's like a whole bunch of thread behind this initial start. Yeah. And then I check and then the bobbin case is not locked in and it was driving me nuts, and I'll address it in the video, but I think the bobbin case is defective. And so I ordered a new one from, because the bob, I click it in, and I'd be like, it's clicked in, it's clicked in. And I had to like make a conscious effort, and then I go to show, and then it's not clicked in. I'm like, what is going on? It's like beyond my ability to troubleshoot. And so I fumbled my way through it. And so that was a bit of a hurdle. And sewing, if much like CNCing and laser cutting and and programs and files, very rarely, I'm going to mute and cough. Very rarely are these things bug free. And a sewing machine is the same thing. You really have to be patient. I know some of my friends that sew and they get so frustrated. You really have to be patient and just expect the problems, start to figure out patterns, make sure your thread is correctly through the machine. There have been times where I could not correct a problem. And I'm like, let me just go look online. And you go look online and you missed one thing on the sewing machine. And that really makes all the difference. It's very, very, they're very, very temperamental machines, all sewing machines. But you develop a confidence with the machine. And that just comes from sitting in the chair.
That's an interesting perspective. I don't think of a sewing machine as a tool. I just never have thought about that. But I guess that makes a lot of sense. Just like anything else, it's going to have setup and maintenance and... Anyway,
well, I said it. I don't know if I said it publicly or where I said it, but I want to get as confident on the sewing machine as I am on the bandsaw, and that's just literally just continuously sewing, knowing like the foot tension, especially the machines. Each machine is like a different car. You step on the pedal, you don't know how fast it's going to go. With the new 303, it's got a stepper motor, so you could adjust the top speed. So if you step on the pedal as far as it goes, you could adjust that. It'll only be like a walking pace versus a production pace. Whereas these older Jukis that have a clutch machine, which is the older machines have these motors that just spin wildly at top speed. And then you're tapping into that with a clutch. So your foot, you could literally put all the pressure on it and then the machine will suck the material through it. And the way I used to temper that before the step motors were a thing, I cut a piece of wood and stick it under the treadle. And so you can only step on the treadle as far as that piece of wood so you don't lose control of your cut. So that's a tip for somebody that's out there. But Dave, you had a thought. What were you going to say?
I was wondering what when you're sewing and something is going wrong, what is your immediate reaction or attitude? Because I tend to, and this doesn't show up on camera, but I tend to like,
I'm laughing,
everything is ruined. F this, F that. I need a break. Are you calm in these situations?
No.
Okay.
I was alone in the shop the other day and it kept happening. And I screamed out the expletive as loud as I could. I said, why does this keep happening? I don't even think the camera was on. I said, why does this keep happening? Mm-hmm. And I yanked it. I was like, gah. And I yanked it out of the machine and there's like a big ball of thread on the back.
So I'm not alone.
No, when I got to that point, I was like, calm down. Remember, sensei. And I'm talking to myself, like,
yeah.
student, sensei. Yes. I'm like, nah. And I'm like, no. Figure out the problem. Okay. The bobbin case keeps coming loose. Why? But I did have an explosion. Because it just kept happening while I was in like the depths of like the sleep stitch. And I'm like, the camera's just like, I got like a whole sail of a boat next to me. At one point I got myself cornered and I had to shove the whole entire jacket through the neck of the, so I'm like, why did I start on this side? But yeah, these problems happen.
Well, this is tangential, but one thing I meant to tell you last week, and this is an encouragement toward the sewing and specifically the leather work that you do, the videos. I know sometimes those don't work out like you want them to, but last week, before we recorded, the night before, we had a patron hangout with the I Like to Make Stuff patrons. And Scott over there, one of the guys that's always around, has been huge help and supporter. He was at home. He's usually on his way home. He's in his car when he like calls and just does audio and, you know, whatever. And he was home. And I was like, hey, what are you? You're home from work early today. And he said, yeah, I'm here, like waiting for a UPS delivery from Weaver because after watching Jimmy do leather for all this time, I finally bit the bullet and I bought.
Oh, good.
And he like laid out all this different stuff that he bought.
Oh,
he was
great.
Like, I'm finally going to do leather work. You know,
oh,
he was really excited.
That's great.
And he was just like watching out the window, waiting for his delivery of all of his leather supplies. But that was all directly from you doing it. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool.
That's really cool. That's great to hear.
The other thing, just to jump back real quickly, you were talking about the wheel bearing, and I don't know what the problem is there on the truck, but I will tell you this. You have a lot more car experience than I do, and I, by myself, completely rebuilt the front knuckle bearing the entire assembly on my green cruiser with no idea what I was doing following tutorials, and it was messy, but it was easy. So if I can do it, I'm positive you can do
it. Well, this is the frustration. Rob started it. He pulled all the bearings out of the rear hubs. And then Rob sends me the links. Rob does good research. He finds all the things we need. I buy everything. I get a package yesterday from Amazon. It's like the last package of all the bearings. I open up, there's one bearing in it. I'm like, I ordered a pair. Why is there one bearing in this like box? You know, you can see how like laissez-faire they are at Amazon. A box shows up that looks like it could have, you know, like the volume of a pillow. And it's full of padding and there's a bearing in it and like a box of needles that I bought. That's like the size of a cigarette case. Like, I guess they were out of small boxes.
Yeah. I don't know how they gauge that sometimes, but
yeah.
Well, anyway, it is a, you know, that rebuild is messy. I'm sure it's different, but it's not something like you won't have any trouble with it.
Yeah. No, I got to get in there and just start. I've kind of laxed on it. I told you guys I'm getting those other cars as the spring starts to break. Probably February I'll get them. These other car projects but they're not going to be cars I own. They'll be cars I play with for the aerodrome.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters while we wait for David to get back. He disappeared for a minute, probably taking dogs out, but, you know, he's right there. Huge thanks to everybody over at Patreon. Who supports the show, who gives us feedback, gives us ideas. We're just really grateful for the support and for the messages. Like I forwarded several messages to the guys this week that patrons sent in, just different links and encouragements and stuff. So big thanks to everybody over there, especially our top supporters. That's Works by Solo, Warren Works, The New Janky Workshop, Scott, Dad at Yourself DIY, Rich at Low End Design, Pete Rondeau, Odin Leather Goods, Nick Ryan, Michael Manegin, Chris McCormick, Chad from Mancrafting, Albers Woodworks, and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc. But also people like Sean Carlin, who has been supporting the show for 8 years. That's awesome. Since 2018. Thank you, Sean. Really grateful for the support. Everybody gets the after show, which is secret stuff, upcoming stuff, stuff that wasn't interesting enough to talk about here, but somehow becomes interesting after we stop the show. So if you want to get that, you go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level. Everybody gets the link for the after show podcast. There's links for the video as well. If you want to get that, and yeah. Thank you very much for the support on Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have anything to recommend?
You know what? You guys are talking about guitar, and I screen grabbed this before having coffee before we started, and I was like, I don't know if this is interesting enough, but you guys talked about guitar, and the only way I could save this guy's Instagram is to screen grab it, and I'll read it out. Like, why is this?
I don't think that's the only way you can. That's not the only way to save things.
Do not question.
Do you guys follow? Maybe he's famous, and I just never heard of him because Questlove follows him. Dan Barracuda. Do you guys follow Dan Barracuda?
I don't know the name.
Dan Barracuda. I only watched two of his videos this morning, and he breaks down guitar solos. Oh, and not only does he break down guitar solos, he does them flawlessly. He's an extremely talented musician who's obviously spent a tremendous amount of his life practicing. He's so good. He breaks down the guitar solo by Eddie Van Halen and Beat It. And he breaks down the All Along the Watchtower. Those are the two ones I watched. And they're so riveting and partly, predominantly because he's so passionate. And like when he explains something, he like gets so into it. It was very infectious. You got to check it out. Dan Barracuda on Instagram, if you're a guitar player. He breaks it down note by note by note, even just like a 10-second guitar solo. He breaks it down into a 1-minute video. He probably has a YouTube too.
Yeah, it looks like he's got YouTube. He's a guitarist, music producer, composer, mixing engineer. Wow.
So good. You guys will really dig it. Just breaking down, like he broke down, which is so funny. I this happened a couple months ago. I found a guy breaking down the guitar solo in Reeling in the Years, and he nailed it, and he was so excited. He said to us, he's like, do you understand how hard I've been working at this? And now when I hear that little guitar lick in the song, it means so much more to me than just the passing. Now, same thing with Dan Barracuda, this one, broke down the guitar solo in All Along the Watchtower. And I've heard that song 50 billion times to the point where, like, when it comes on the radio, I click past it because I don't want to hear it. But him breaking down the guitar solo makes you appreciate it so much more.
Hmm.
That's it.
Awesome. Cool. David, what you got?
I didn't think I was going to have one this morning. I was going through my history. I'm like, this will be one of those days I don't have anything. And then as I was getting ready, I just started playing some of the videos in my watch later list. And this one came up, and it's fantastic. It's an artist named Ash Bentley, and her video is called I Implore You to Make Dumb Art. And I think she said her and her partner every year do this Christmas gift thing where they try to give each other the worst gift, but it has to be somewhat usable. And she makes this little monster thing for him to keep. He keeps losing his AirPods. And so she made this little monster thing where he can put the AirPods in when he's not using them. And it's just a great video. I immediately subscribed after watching this.
Huh. Cool. That is a interesting looking monster. Yeah, for sure. That's cool. So mine is somebody, I can't remember who sent this to me. I forgot. I'm sorry, but it was on Discord, I think. So there's a guy on YouTube named Jazza. You guys probably know Jazza. He's an artist, and I've seen him before, but I have never watched a whole lot of his videos. I just, for no particular reason. But anyway, he put out the first video of this year. It's called YouTube is Making This Impossible, and it's him doing oil painting, and it's him talking about how he's avoided doing something, oil painting, that he's really wanted to do for a long time for all these different algorithmic reasons and business reasons and all this stuff. And it's also in kind of in response to AI art, and it's a really good video. It's just it's very thoughtful. And it's not like complainy or anything. It's just like, I'm finally taking the time to do this thing that I've wanted to do, even though it may not be this or it may not be that or whatever. And so it's just a thoughtful way to do what we've been talking about, you know, on a regular basis, is just trying to find the things that make us happy that also overlap with what other people find interesting. And so, yeah, I think you should go watch it, and you should watch it all the way to the end to help. The whole idea is that it takes time, and things that take time are difficult to justify. And I found myself like getting through the majority of the video and was like, okay, yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed this. I get it. And I had the tendency to click away just because, like, yeah, it's good job.
All of us.
And I was like, wait a minute. No, this is hard for him to do because it takes so long. And there's more video because he wanted to include it. Like, I need to, if I want this thing to exist for me, I need to help it exist for other people as well. Watching the rest of the video was one simple way to do that. So if you watch it, just watch all of it.
Yeah. Jimmy, that's what I got. I believe Jimmy did some sort of event in Europe with Jazza. Do you remember this, Jimmy?
Was it last year?
I think he was at Maker Central, wasn't he?
Yeah. That's why the name sounded familiar to me, because I wasn't familiar with him until we actually met. We were under the same tent getting sick, and he had a huge line.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah.
Yep, and he does all sorts of stuff, and is really good at all of it. So, and it was interesting to listen to him talk about in the video, like, you know, I would love to do all of these things, and he lists out all these different, you know, like, more woodworking and metalworking, and I would love this and all these things. And I'm like, wow, this is what we get to do all the time. And I actually felt for the guy. I'm like, I don't think he feels like he can do that stuff because of, you know, it just feels maybe out of his, I don't know if it's comfort level or content type, or I don't know, but I was like, wow, man, I hope he's encouraged to do those things, because this is all stuff that we get to play with and, you know, everything. So anyway, go check him out. You guys got anything else for this week?
I think we're good.
Cool. Stay warm, everybody. Thanks for being here, and we'll catch you next time.
Love you. Bye, guys.